drought management, feed management, fly management. Part two today covers it all. Crew, let's ranch it up. Good day, everyone, and thanks for riding with us on this all-new episode of the Ranch It Up Radio Show. I'm Jeff Tigger Earhart. A big thank you goes out to our partners for today's episode, the American Gelve Association, Pharmatan by Imogene Ingredients, Jorgensen Land and Cattle, LivestockMarket.com, RanchChannel.com, The Sales Series, Sire Buyer, Westway Feed Products, and this fine radio station.
Cattle Battle.
I hope your outfit was able to dodge the tough weather this past week, and hopefully y'all got a shot of rain at your outfit. We were lucky to get close to an inch. No complaints here whatsoever, but even with a recent shot of rain, drought still looms for much of cow country, the country, I should say. Some producers are already facing liquidating pairs. Others are trying to hold on as long as possible. And last week, we started our series on drought management with Trevor Burian from Killdeer, North Dakota. In case you missed any of that or have to duck out early today, I don't know why you would, the whole conversation with Trevor will be available on the sales series found on Ranch Channel. Trevor is back again today. And hey, Trevor, thanks for joining us and sharing what works and what doesn't work on your outfit. Let's keep deep diving this topic of drought management and really focus, I mean micro focus, on the individual cow. When you're going through and paying attention to those body condition of those cows, do you agree with me that that is one of the best indicators of performance right there? One of the easiest things that you can do is just to start to keep track of that, of where that cow was, where she is today. And that'll tell you pretty quickly of if you are nutrient deficient at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing we keep an eye on really close is what the manure looks like. You can tell a lot of about a cow or yearling, whatever, performance by looking at what the manure looks like. So this time of the year, we have a lot of new growth green grass. So if you go out there in the pasture and you're looking at the manure from the cattle, if it's just like a splat on the ground, you know, not really stacking up, it's really loose, they are getting too much protein and not enough fiber. So in a drought situation like we are, another option, if that is a situation, you could supplement a high fiber feed like a wheat straw or slew hay. And you might think these cattle are on green grass. There's no way they're going to eat this stuff, but they absolutely will, especially if their manure looks like that. They will happily eat that straw or high fiber hay just to balance their own gut. If you're looking at the manure and it's stacked up 2-3 inches high and it's kind of in a circle and it looks like cake batter and a nice little puddle in the middle, like that is the optimum manure pile, and that animal is probably performing really well. If you look at manure and it's starting to stack up like over 3 inches and it's not really round and it's kind of lumpy, that animal's getting too much fiber and not enough protein. And so you might have to look at supplementing some protein, whether it be cake, lick tubs, bringing some alfalfa out there. But yeah, you can, both by looking at the body condition of the cattle and at the manure, you can tell a lot about how those animals are performing.
So if you have like some high protein lick tubs that are out there that have a lot of molasses in them or something like that, will those cattle balance themselves off of just this topic of manure management, if you will? Will they balance themselves where they won't overdo it?
Yeah, to a certain extent. They're always going to want to lick on those molasses lick tubs a little bit because they taste good. But yeah, when you first put them out there, they definitely consume a lot more than they do once they get that protein into their system and start balancing that protein to fiber ratio.
When you are grazing, like you said, just grazing a small area of your ranch very intensely. Well, you've got a big population of animals in a small area. do you really have to pay attention to fly management in a situation like this? Because those cattle aren't able to get out to these different corners and go into the brush or whatever the case is. Is that something you have to really now pay attention to as well as the fly management, where they might drive some of these animals nuts, to make sure that you keep the performance on those cattle?
So we actually don't do any sort of fly control.
Really?
With moving like this. So the life cycle of a fly, so day one, a cow poops on the ground, there's manure, a fly will come and lay its eggs there. And then it takes about 2 to 3 weeks for that egg to hatch. So with how we're moving and being out of those pastures within 2 weeks, we're moving away from those flies for the most part. Now, we might go to a pasture next door, you know, or right next, and then, you know, those flies can obviously fly across a fence, and they're right there anyway. But if we're getting a lot of trouble with flies and it's impacting cattle performance, we'll just, if we have the luxury and the grass to do it, we'll try to move those cows at least a half mile away into a different pasture and get them away from where all those fly eggs and flies are, and start a whole new fly cycle over in that pasture. And then after a month or so, when the fly cycle over in the previous pasture has died out, we might move back over there and finish grazing off that grass.
Interesting. And not saying that you're not recommending by any stretch of the imagination, don't use fly tags or oilers or anything like that. This is just something that you found that works for your outfit.
Yep, correct. So we everyone has their own situations, but we try to stay away from ivermectin and wormer and any insecticide, because we believe that, I know the labels say something different, but you know, if it kills one insect, it's going to have harmful effects on many other insects, and including dung beetles that help break down the manure. There's certain dung beetles that actually eat fly eggs. And so when you're killing the flies and the fly eggs, you're also killing those beneficial insects as well. And so we're trying to keep as many of those beneficial insects around as possible. But I'm not saying what anybody else does is right or wrong. I guess that's just the context that we try to operate in.
So ultimately, what you're really doing on your place, really landing the plane, and these are fascinating topics. I mean, it's very much a micromanaging that you're talking about. You're paying attention to manure, and it's not just glancing out there with binoculars and yep, and taking a head count and moving on. You are really, really micromanaging all of these different aspects, if you will, of summer grazing just in and of itself. And you're using the environment that you have available to you, you're using the tools that you have available to you, and you're really trying to work with the environment of the weather, the moisture, or the lack thereof for a lot of people. You're trying to use the soil condition that you have and improve on what you have available to you, and really trying to make that and turn it into an extremely efficient ecosystem.
Yes, absolutely. And you might hear all, or people might hear all the things I say and like, well, we don't have time for all that. Like we move cattle 1 to 2 times a day, but we are all, and we have two groups of cattle. This year we're going to have a group of 500 steers, and then we're going to have a group of 250 pairs. And so we're moving each group of those cattle at least once, maybe twice a day. But all that only takes probably 2 to 3 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the afternoon. And before we started doing like this, I mean, I was haying and feeding all winter. And now we're able to, we obviously had to get water to all the hay fields and stuff. But now we're able to harvest the entirety of our property. When before I had a couple $100,000 of equipment to do it, we're able to do it with a couple four-wheelers and a Ranger. Polaris Ranger side by side and some poly wire, and it only takes 4 to 5 hours a day on average. It really doesn't take more time than conventional management in that way. You know, you might have to hire somebody. I have a hired hand that helps me every day, and if I make sure I go out there at least once a day, but he can go out there and check things and move things without me once I tell him what to do. But the best fertilizer for land is your shadow. getting out there, seeing what the grass is doing, seeing what the cows look like, looking at the manure, what do the cattle need, what does the grass need, and taking all those things into consideration. And I believe that it more than pays for itself in just your added health of the land, added health of the cattle, and then your overall production on the land too.
Thanks, Trevor. Again, in case you missed any of our conversation, you can find this all wrapped into one program. Just head to ranchchannel.com. Click on the sales series to follow up. Next week, we focus on the nutrition side a whole lot more when it comes to drought management. Crew, it's time for a break. We'll be back with more of the Ranch It Up Radio Show right after this.
Grass changes, weather changes, and your cattle's nutritional needs change right along with it. But don't let your mineral program fall behind. Synergy with TRT from Westway Feed Products is built for real pasture conditions, helping support consistent intake, improved forage utilization, and more predictable herd performance. It's a smarter liquid mineral solution for beef cattle on pasture. Ask for Synergy with TRT liquid mineral supplement from Westway Feed Products.
Calf prices are good, but want to add another $100 per calf? Here's the solution. Gelve and Balancer females add an average maternal weaning weight advantage of 22.7 pounds per calf. At a market price of $4.50 a pound on 5-weight steers with a 22.7-pound weaning weight advantage, that's an additional $102.15 per calf. Gelve and Balancer females, they make it work. This is Jeff Tigger Earhart, and check this out coming in 2026. RanchChannel.com proudly launches the Sales Series, your inside track to the world of livestock and ranching excellence. From elite bulls, heifers, and horses to the land and equipment, products, and programs shaping the future of agriculture, we bring you the stories behind the operations, the vision behind the genetics, and the focus that can elevate your herd. Whether you're building, expanding, or fine-tuning your ranch, dive deeper into the innovations and livestock programs changing the game. The Sales Series, only on RanchChannel.com, where smart ranching starts. Cow Country News, you know, the cow stuff.
According to Daryl Peel, Oklahoma State University Extension Livestock Marketing Specialist, the role of China in global beef markets has changed rapidly in the last two decades. China, including Hong Kong, was not a player at all in global beef markets as little as 15 years ago, but has risen rapidly to become the largest beef importer in the last decade. For many years, China was a large beef producing and consuming country, but had almost no presence in global beef markets. Starting about 2013, rising beef consumption in China began to exceed domestic beef production, leading for the first time to significant beef imports. Although per capita beef consumption in China remains relatively low, roughly 13 pounds compared to 59 pounds in the U.S., the large population means that small increases in beef consumption represent large amounts of beef in total. According to the U.S. Meat Export Federation President CEO Dan Hellstrom, China's re-entry into the market for U.S. beef exports will have a significant and rapid price feedback to the American industry from other markets. He called it a hidden benefit from China's renewal of registrations for U.S. beef facilities, as well as hoped for resolution of suspensions of a significant number of plants. Most of the registrations were abruptly declared expired in March 2025 before being listed as renewed last week following a meeting in Beijing between U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese leader Xi Jinping. In other news, an announcement came late last week that Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton launched an investigation into the beef industry over potential anti-competitive conduct among the nation's largest meatpackers. Paxton said the investigation would be conducted alongside a separate antitrust probe announced by the U.S. Department of Justice under President Donald Trump's administration. The investigation is focused on the highly concentrated beef packing sector, where four companies, JBS, Tyson Fresh Meats, Cargill, and National Beef Packing Company, collectively control more than 85% of U.S. beef processing capacity, according to Paxton's office. The attorney general cited reports alleging the companies may have used their market power to suppress cattle prices paid to ranchers while increasing beef prices for consumers. Next, the number of New World screwworm cases reported in Mexico continues to grow, prompting USDA officials to intensify surveillance and carefully manage the limited supply of sterile flies used to contain the pest spread. USDA says sterile fly dispersal efforts are currently concentrated along the Gulf Coast of northern Mexico, with additional drops occurring within 50 miles of the Texas border. Officials say the agency is relying heavily on predictive modeling and real-time surveillance data to determine where those flies are deployed. USDA says those decisions are being made in coordination with the agency's Agricultural Research Service, using predictive analytics designed to anticipate where the pest could spread next, not simply where cases are currently confirmed. U.S. beef imports are projected to top 6 billion pounds for the first time in history, up 166% since 2010. Last week's USDA WASDE report projected 2026 U.S. beef imports at 6.1 billion pounds, the highest level in history and the first time beef imports have ever exceeded 6 billion pounds. The projection would mark an increase of 638 million pounds, or 11.7%, from 2025 levels and continue a trend that has seen beef imports increase every year since 2017. Since 2010, U.S. beef imports have climbed from 2.3 billion pounds to more than 6.1 billion pounds, an increase of roughly 3.8 billion pounds, or nearly 166%. The sharp rise in imports has coincided with declining U.S. cattle inventories and historically tight domestic beef supplies. Retail beef prices rocket higher as 9 cuts set new record highs in April. Retail beef prices continued their sharp climb in April as all 12 major beef categories increased from March levels, with 9 of the 12 cuts establishing new all-time record highs. The retail beef price composite increased from $8.93 per pound in March to a record $9.28 per pound in April, rising 35 cents per pound in just 1 month. Ground beef prices continued pushing higher across every category. Ground chuck increased from $6.68 to a record $6.92 per pound, while ground beef climbed from $6.70 to $6.90 per pound. Lean and extra lean ground beef jumped 31 cents to a record $8.51 per pound, and all uncooked ground beef increased to a record $7.06 per pound. Roast values posted some of the largest monthly increases. Chuck roast, USDA choice boneless, surged 66 cents to a record $9.50 per pound, while round roast choice boneless climbed 51 cents to a record $8.98 per pound. Only three categories failed to establish new all-time highs during April. Round steak, USDA choice, increased from $9.61 to $9.83 per pound, but remained below its February 2026 record high of $10.09 per pound. Beef for stew, boneless, rose from $8.41 to $8.65 per pound, but stayed below its November 2025 record of $9.17 per pound. All uncooked other beef increased from $7.68 to $7.92 per pound, still below its November 2025 record high of $8.20 per pound. And before we head to break, looking for those elite red Angus show heifer projects for that junior exhibitor? Check out the upcoming online auction from Lazy 3 Cattle. Sale and online bidding information available at ranchchannel.com and steerbidder.com. This is Rebecca Wanner, a.k.a. Beck, with the news for the Ranch It Up Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Sire Buyer, a place where we connect cattlemen, the nation's number one destination for buying and selling breeding genetics. In-depth reviews and upbeat news on your favorite sires. Sire Buyer features the top Angus bulls across the country. Be sure to sign up to receive your directory by emailing info@sirebuyer.com. If you're looking for the best place in breeding genetics, you've just found it.
I run a 150 cow-calf operation.
2 years ago, Nick Small of Fullerton ran into scours in his cow-calf operation.
But I had a big problem with coccidiosis scours, and I went to my whole herd.
The next year, after getting his herd on a dosage of Pharmatan Sweet Chestnut Tannin, how many cases of scours did you have?
Zero. I'm not kidding. I didn't have any.
Learn more at PharmaTanUSA.com or call Joe Knopp at 402-340-3323.
RanchChannel.com, your farm and ranch network on demand. Bull sales, Western events, product information, right at your fingertips on the ultimate cowboy-friendly platform. Want to follow up-to-date markets? RanchChannel.com. No need to dig for information on all these different websites. It's all right there on RanchChannel.com. Y'all are loving it now, aren't you?
Welcome back, everyone, to the Ranch It Up radio show. It's that time in the program. Y'all know what's going to happen. We're going to check in with Kirk Donsbach, StoneX Financial Incorporated, recapping the markets from last week. So, Kirk, numbers-wise, what do you got for us?
Good morning, Tigger, and all your listeners out there. As of Friday, May 15th, August feeder futures closed the week at 361.27.5. That's down 287.5 on the week, with the CME feeder index down $4.74 at 370.09. That left the basis versus May futures at positive 131.5. June live cattle closed the week at 253.95. That's up 477.5 on the week, with cash trading a very salty 260 to 265 in all regions. That left the five-area weighted average at 445 at 262.77, and that was on 30,039 head, so a very good test. The basis versus June futures was positive $8.82, with choice boxes trading only 86 cents higher at 389.25. So I just want to point out to your listeners that the packer is buying live animals, or dressed, if you will, at 410 to 415, and they're selling boxes out the back door at 389 and a quarter. Obviously, that math is very concerning. Weekly slaughter was up 7,000 head over last week at 530,000, but that's still 31,000 head below the same week last year. Dress weights decreased 1 pound to 900 pounds, which is 29 pounds higher than this week last year. The combination had yearly production up 0.2% at 6.7% less than this week last year. U.S. fresh beef imports remained at 14% above last year. Last week, we talked about Brazil hitting China's import quota, probably in June. President Trump announced that he was going to suspend all quotas from countries that import beef to the U.S. And then later that same day, he temporarily delayed that action. That would be very big news if the quotas were suspended on beef imports into the U.S. To wrap this up, December corn closed the week at 481 and a quarter. That's down 12 and a quarter on the week. President Trump had his meeting with China, but it did not produce the fireworks that the market was looking for. Thus, we got the weak trade. However, I do feel that corn is fundamentally bullish with the weather and fertilizer story.
So before we say fare thee well, late last week, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange Group, they said that they're going to expand daily trading limits for cattle futures beginning the 1st of June. So first is, Kirk, what are those expanded limits? What are those going to be? And then the next question is why?
So live cattle moved from 7.25 to 8.5 bucks on a daily limit, and feeder cattle moved from 9.25 to 10.75. The way this works, live cattle are based on the volatility and the overall price of live cattle futures, and then feeder futures daily limit is simply a calculation based on what live cattle is. I will say, kind of oversimplifying all this, daily limits are concerning when they're increasing. That obviously means you're exposed more on a daily move to what you could lose or make. The inverse to that is, or the only thing worse than that, is being in a position that's going against you and you cannot get out. So although I do not like the higher limits, I think having limits high enough that a market can freely trade is much better than having a market with smaller limits that you're stuck in.
A fair amount of that came from just the extreme drought that so many people are facing right now. And with export markets, and like you just mentioned a little bit ago, was to kind of open that up to keep the trade moving. Is that right?
All of that would be adding to the volatility both directions. Kind of the simplest way to look at it, it just needs to be a basic percentage of the value of the market, right? And fats went from, you know, $1.50 to $2.50. So obviously, to maintain the same percentage, you're going to have a higher daily limit just based on the level we're trading.
Want to know what the most valuable piece of information is for your cattle operation? Hey, hey, I'm Shay Wanner, and I host the Casual Cattle Conversations podcast. I visited with Don Anderson from the Cattle Scales team, where we talk about all the different ways that cattle weights at different stages of their life cycle have an impact on the bottom line of ranchers. Here's a portion of our conversation.
You can't manage what you don't measure. Most ranchers are making decisions without one of the most valuable pieces of data on their operation, which is actual weights.
If someone out there listening does not have a scale and they're kind of tiptoeing back and forth over the line of, should I get one? Should I not get one?
Well, number one, I appreciate people that have taken a lot of time to think over what they want. A good scale is an investment. And I talk to customers all the time about it. It's just like, it is an investment, and it's going to change how you operate from there on out.
Ready to tune into the full conversation? Check out the Casual Cattle Conversations podcast on your favorite podcast player as soon as you're done listening to the Ranch It Up radio show.
And now that's going to wrap it up for today. A big thanks goes out to our crew, Trevor Burian, Kirk Donsbach with StoneX Financial Incorporated, and Shay Wanner with Casual Cattle Conversations. A big thank you to our partners for today's episode, the American Gelvie Association, Pharmatan by Imogene Ingredients, Jorgensen Land and Cattle, LivestockMarket.com, RanchChannel.com, The Sales Series, Sire Buyer, Westway Feed Products, the world-famous Miles City Buck and Horse Sale, and this fine radio station. And crew, so glad y'all came with us one more time as we ranch it up. Be sure to follow and like us on Facebook at Ranch It Up Show. Our email is ranchitupshow@gmail.com. You can call and text 24/7. Our phone number, 707-RANCH-20. That's 707-726-2420. Spread the good word and join us again next week, where it's always Tigger and Beck approved. Stay ranchy and ranch it up.